I'm Terry Thornton. I'm Curator of Education, and I'm happy to welcome you to Tuesday evenings at the Modern. This is the last Tuesday evening of the spring 2010 season. It has been a good run, and I appreciate the faithful who attend each week, and I welcome anyone who is new tonight. I see some new faces. This lecture series is free, open to the public, and on a regular basis, it's pretty awesome. So I invite you to come back when we begin again in September. You can revisit the lectures from this season and from the fall and archived back through podcasts on the Modern's website, where you will find the fall schedule. If you look, say, in August, you'll see what the schedule and who the speakers are going to be for the fall. And also where you can find other exciting programs and opportunities, such as the public lectures, Andy Warhol and His Legacy by Dr. Mark Thistlethwaite, here in the auditorium, 4 to 5 p.m. on Wednesdays through April 21st. Tomorrow, Mark discusses the symbiotic relationship between advertising and art in Warhol's Alchemy, Advertising into Art into Advertising. So I invite you all to come back for that if you're available between the hour of 4 to 5. Last week he started with kind of an introduction, and it was great, very well attended, so come early and get a seat. Also on the website is a list of artists participating in Sundays with Andy, which those of you who attend regularly know is an ongoing artist-led tour series through the run of the Andy Warhol exhibition. So there are 14 artists who have come each week, one each week for the run of the show, all from the DFW area, which I think speaks very highly of where we live and the talent this place seems to breed. This Sunday, artist Margaret Meehan has a very unique take on Warhol himself, as seen through the work in Andy Warhol, The Last Decade. Since this is the last Tuesday evening, I won't be able in coming weeks, to remind you of these exceptional tours with the likes of Daryl Laster, Kevin Todora, Dan Blagg, Pat Kelly, and Jeff Zelm. So I encourage you to visit the website and mark your calendars. You're just going to have to be responsible for yourself. I won't be here for you. Tonight we end our run this spring in a fitting manner with the final Focus exhibition artist, Ben Jones. Ben is currently living in L.A., a temporary sojourn from Providence, Rhode Island, where he lives and works, that I believe he's going to fill us in on tonight. He'll tell us what he's doing in L.A., with a BFA from the Massachusetts College of Art, Ben is an interdisciplinary artist who is recognized in both design and the fine arts world, and is one-third of the celebrated East Coast art collective Paper Rad that some of you may be familiar with. Ben's 2009 exhibition, New Dark Age at Deitch Projects in New York, received a great deal of critical acclaim. Described in the Deitch Project's press release, which purportedly was written with a comically oversized pencil, as viewed through the hot pink plexi lens of new media theory, the exhibition could be seen as the best hypertextually knotted website ever come to life. Through $200 vintage frames, it is the celebration of classical architecture. To the naked eye, the new dark age might be a blinding glimpse at the darkly comic heart of the internet generation gone wild. This exhibition was an adaptation of Celebrate the New Dark Age at AMP in Athens, Greece in 2008, and is accompanied by a catalog published by Picture Book and a zine that Ben himself designed. Other exhibitions include the Liverpool Biennial, New York Minute at Marco in Rome, and Dr. Du at the MoMA. As an interdisciplinary artist, Ben is also known for his performances such as Problems Solvers, Detroit Museum of Contemporary Art, and also at Sundance Film Festival, Education for Dead Adults at the New Museum in New York, Dr. Du at the Athens Biennial, Pop Rally at the Museum of Modern Art, New York, and the heart of the internet at the Kitchen in New York. In addition to Ben's show opening this weekend, he is performing Dr. Dew, performing Black Math for this year's Modern Till Midnight, which is another reason to visit the website so you can get the details on an evening that I think promises to be one not easily forgotten. And with tonight's lecture, we get the story first. That's always the advantage of coming to Tuesday evenings at the Modern. So without further delay, please join me in welcoming Ben Jones.
Hi, everybody. Let's start with a joke. Webster's Dictionary defines art as A, ability, R, readiness, T, tude, or attitude. I saw this Bill Murray movie last night on HBO where he's a motivational speaker and he has like a scene like that. And I just really wanted to do that. Bill Murray is an idol of mine as a man and professional artist. And anyway, okay. So I also did that to prepare you for how bad of a lecturer I am and how informal this is going to be. It's not going to be, I'm not like an academic. I'm bad at communicating, which is kind of weird because, like, I'm in Hollywood now, and I'm an actor and a writer, and yet I can't really get my thoughts across in settings like this. But I'm going to try, and I'm going to show you lots of cool stuff, and I think this will be really fun, if not just for the content. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about me so we can figure out who I am and how all this stuff works. I am an artist. I'm here because my here's some of my art. This is my website, benjaminqjones.org. This is something I just did that's relevant. We're going to be showing some of this stuff in the gallery that opens this weekend. I presented these objects as furniture, I presented them as art, as furniture. But they're art. And the quote I gave at the opening, this was a design fair, and the quote I gave was, the night of the opening, I said that, the artforum.com, and it got lots of publicity, I said that art could be design, but design couldn't be art, and all the design people got very upset. But that's what I think. Anyway, other stuff I did, the press release we just heard, which was written as a complete joke, and it's so funny to hear you have to read it, because I just have to apologize. That was meant to never be read out loud. Here it is right here. Here's some pictures from that show. Again, I realize like this stuff is really hard to understand all at once, but I'm just going to kind of throw stuff at you, and hopefully, you know, in a half hour, you'll be able to filter some stuff. So I do stuff that's like, I don't know. I mean, I don't really want to explain it right off the bat, but you can see it's colorful. And it has like a look and a feel to it, I think. It has a visual language. I'm comfortable saying like, I certainly have a look and feel to my work, but I think that's more like, you know, like you could just say it's a style, but I think it's a bit like a more complicated way to think about it is like a language. You know, like codes and hieroglyphics, stuff like that. All right, so that's basically the art I've been doing for the last couple of years. This is what my new stuff looks like. Go back to my notes. So, but it all started because as a kid, I would draw a lot, and then I decided to go to art school. And at art school in Boston, I took those drawings and I learned like different things to do with them, obviously, like animation, design, art, which I think are kind of different things. And, I want to show you one of my drawings as a child. And it's not much different, which I think is great. This is 1989. Anytime I had an excuse to draw, like this is supposed to be a report on like science or something, but I turned it into like how to draw one of my characters. Tuck's dog, this thing on the right, was a character I invented. And here we figure out how to draw them. And it's so funny because the spelling and just, it just shows that while I've always been able to draw, I've equally always never been able to like talk or write. It's funny. It's so horrible. Okay. Right, so that's me as a kid, and then I go to college. I learn how to refine those talents into something, art, animation, design, and also in college, which I think is super important. I met a lot of kids who were just like me. Well, not just like me, you know, like same whatever, same generation, went through like a similar experience growing up, and they were doing, weirdly enough, like I didn't know them, but like all this crazy art I've been showing you that I do, like we were all kind of doing similar stuff. And when we saw each other, it was like 10 people out of a school of, you know, a big college, and we saw each other, we were like, you know, I know what you're trying to do with that. Like, I've been drawing like that since a kid too, and they'd showed me their Tuck's dogs from when they were a kid. But it was great to be around these people because it's from that that we shared a lot of ideas, and we kind of like, you know, it was competitive at some times, and it was like, it was probably more valuable than the college itself was meeting these kids, and that really developed my chops or whatever. And I think that drawing style was super influential and is today to a whole generation of noise musicians. That's my joke, but I think it's actually super influential as a drawing style, and I that sounds egotistical for me to say that I'm like that I have a super influential drawing style, but it's not just me, it's like me and these other contemporaries of mine, friends, and I have some proof, really quick proof of this drawing style. So we'll look at something I did with this drawing style. And when I say drawing, it's a very loose thing. Like, when I say drawing style, it's meant to indicate, like, what happens when I do something visually. And I think inherent in my, you know, drawing style is a storytelling style, is lots of different things. Anyway, this is a video. I'm just going to, like, scan through it. It should not have sound. It's going to be very complicated. I just wanted to show, like, again, a lot going on. You're not going to understand this immediately, but... or will you? And so we were doing this, and this, like, stuck in people's brains, and it's not that mainstream. Like, it takes a refined eye to be able to digest this insanity. But... this is the drawing style I'm talking about. So an example of it being important and influential is from that drawing style, it got recognized by other artists. One artist was this recording artist. Her name was Maya, but her stage name is MIA. I think she got like mainstream famous a couple years ago because she had a song on the that movie. What was the movie called? Nobody knows. Yes, didn't hear that. But I worked with her a little bit before that. She was like, she saw my stuff. She was like, let's do a video, and I did her website. This is a really bad copy of her video, but you'll see it's has some similar elements to what I just showed you. This totally just looks like noise, like I could be lying to you, but it's actually, I went in and I animated this, and there you go. You can kind of see... there's a little bit of my look and feel to that, or a lot. I mean, the colors, the things. She was doing similar stuff in London with her friends visually, and we all got along, and we collaborated, and we made this video. And I think it's directly, I mean, it literally is directly related to the stuff that I was doing you know, with my friends, in that I did both of them. And then skip to, like, last week when the super famous Rihanna literally just takes, I mean, I'm not going to go through it because I think she doesn't deserve me to go through it frame by frame, but she basically took, you know, that language, that look and feel, and just completely copied it with a huge budget. And I should mention, like, the way we made this video is that Maya went to Jamaica just with, like, two people, a camera, got all these kids to dance for free. Like, the green screen is actually a brick wall they painted green. I wish we had a better copy of this. But, and you know what? It was like, I think it came out good because it was an honest, like, thing. Like, she was into doing it. I was into doing it. Like, she's a really good musician. And it was like, I was excited to do it. And I wasn't coming from, like, let me say this. Like, I did it because I wanted to do a good job and I liked the project. This, I mean, that's not what's going on here. This is like, oh my God, I haven't looked at this. This is so depressing. And the thing is, like, when I see this, this might look similar to you guys, and it should, because it's the same visual language, but I can tell, like, they're faking it. Anyway, back to my notes. Tuck's dog, no. Okay. So that's the visual language that, you know, I can trace back definitely to college, definitely to my friends. And in college and a little bit after college, I'll try to make this a little bit more coherent. My two friends that, I took those friends and I kind of formalized it into an art collective. We never liked the word collective. That was someone else. We thought of it as like a team or a company, a fake company. And these two friends, Jacob and Jessica Chiacci, we got together to kind of brand the stuff we were doing. And we called it Paper Rad, and it was books, animations, performances, clothes. It was just literally our life, and it got kind of put onto this website, and the website itself became something, but also, like, at the same time, the website was meant to archive stuff. But I think this website, again, was just, like, pure awesomeness. Like, we had no intention other than just to wake up in the morning and do this. Why else do I think it's good? Very pure. And so, people really reacted to it positively because there was positive energy. And most of the, you know, there are some people from the art world who loved it, some people from the design world, some people from the animation world. I think those people don't love it anymore, but that's okay. Like, that's a whole other lecture, like, thinking about why things work, how to exploit those things. Because the thing is, like, it was a very pure, like, going from this to this, it's a very straight line. Like, this was still me. I was living at my mom's house when I was doing this, you know, and this is me at my mom's house. This is, like, a very straight, you know, artistic thing. But what happened after Paper Rad, and it was kind of meant to, like, bring other opportunities. Like, obviously, the boys video came from MIA seeing Paper Rad. But what else came from, the two main things I think that came from the Paper Rad site were contemporary art and television, two outlets for this work. I call them the two logical outlets, but I really don't think television's logical. And contemporary art isn't really the most logical outlet for this stuff, but it is and it isn't. Like, contemporary art needs to be challenged. And this was and is still a very challenging thing to cram into a museum. And the museum has to be really smart and really awesome to be able to to be able to, like, digest this and put this up next to, like, established good art, you know, like, how does this, you know, this is a very raw artistic expression, and, like, how does this fit into, maybe we'll talk about that during the question and answer, but the answer was, like, this didn't immediately fit in. Like, there were exhibitions 5 years ago where we tried to take the website and put it into a gallery, and it just, you know, it worked for the first couple times, but I've learned how to take this energy and translate it into something that I think is more relevant to a place like this and the other things like the Deutsch thing we looked at. But tonight, since like we can all look at this art in my presentation, you know, later this week, I thought tonight we'd take a chance to look at the other outlet that this work found, which was television. So look, I took this. I'm going to kind of skip to the fact that I took all this stuff and was able to make a TV pilot for Adult Swim. And I think we're just going to watch it now. It's 11 minutes, and I kind of do want to make an excuse for it. Like Adult Swim, well, I'm not going to make an excuse. Basically, Adult Swim is a programming block at night, and it's the most successful programming block because it appeals to like a demographic which is very profitable, which is 18 to 24-year-old men. And it does that in a variety of ways. Like the thought was that, you know, I could appeal to this demographic because my stuff was crazy and people could get stoned and watch it. I'm definitely not coming from that place. Like, I'm coming from, again, Tuck's Dog. But I was happy to say, like, okay, you know, all right, that's cool. I can work with that. Like, let's make a show like that. So let's watch that show. I'm going to just do a test. Might have a beep. Hopefully this doesn't have a beep. Let me just test to make sure it doesn't. I don't want it to have like a beep and hurt everybody's ears. Okay, it won't. Very informal tonight. All right, here we go.
When I was a kid, I found a small fur creature in a sewer thing. It grew up with me and my twin brother, Roba. His name's Alpha.
Asleep.
Come on, wake up.
Brain network.
Alfay, really, we're dead meat.
Put it in my mouth.
Alfay.
The meat.
There's a problem with the yard.
Oh, schnapp. Is Saz back from her vacation yet?
I don't know.
You think she'll evict us if she sees this?
Probably.
Probably. It's what landlords usually do to us. Roba, why aren't you wearing your belt?
It fell off.
Roba, there's something wrong with the yard.
I know. I mean, we still have to rake the leaves.
Oh, the leaves.
Oh, the leaves. We forgot. Now Thaz is really going to evict
us. Wait, what's wrong with the yard? It's not the leaves?
Wait, I did pick up a pine cone.
Oh, well, good. Well, how many pine cones did you pick up?
Wait, what's wrong with the yard?
One pine cone.
Oh, my God. Is something wrong with the pine cone? Or the yard?
Both. Something strange is in the yard.
And I ate the pine cone.
Oh, dearie.
Is it bad? Should I call 911?
What is that thing? I think it's a sign from the future genies.
What is up there?
Well, it looks like a...
No, don't tell him, Rubba.
Oh, no, you can tell me. I'm the leader. I'm the leader.
Horace, why don't you just go up there and touch it?
I'm scared.
Why? I thought you were the leader.
Can you hug me or not? Hug me?
Stop it, you're hurting me.
Come on, I can't feel my hands. It feels like a snake bit my brain.
Stop.
Go away, a stress ball.
think Alfie might have just laid a stress ball.
Should I get the hose? This is a serious breach of our lease. We aren't allowed to store things in the yard.
Oh, no, this isn't about the yard. It's about me, Alfie.
Oh, shut up. Look, I'm gonna rake the leaves into a pile and then put the rollerblade into the leaf pile.
But what if Thaz jumps in the leaf pile?
No. Listen up. We're not allowed to store stuff in the yard, right? So why don't we take this roller gremlin thing to the void? We can do a controlled dump.
Oh, no.
And then we'll come back and we'll do a controlled fire to these leaves.
Well, I think we should overdose on Shirley Temples and chamomile tea and then take a hot bath and sleep forever. No one would get embarrassed.
I can't tell you why, but I think Alfie's plan is better. We have to do Alfie's plan. It has pedals and a steering wheel. I think we'll all be able to fit in here.
Just so you know, I don't have my wallet or my glasses. I just want someone to acknowledge that.
Alfie Diary. My plan is working. It's a good plan. Pretty soon we'll get to the void. As long as we stay completely focused. Raps. Maybe I should give Raps one more chance. Okay, guys, stop pedaling. I have to do something important. All right, what do we got? Hot nog, root beer, salad, ice cream, Hendrix? Might need to brush up on my reading.
I heard they're calling sunset early.
They're closing the void because of some radical unit.
Radical?
The future genies boost my spirit as I order this bounty of cyber snack nuggets. Do you have business soda? Or purple number F?
What the?
I think dehydration happened with us. Water. Water! Water!
Who's watching the roller skate?
What are you talking about? What are you talking about?
The roller boot? The
I
roller...
I don't know what are you talking
about. Oh, the thing we've been riding around in all day!
Oh, the rollerblade. Oh, it was hot in there. We have dehydration.
I'm just gonna order liquid. Can I have one kid-sized milkshake-ish extra malt? Robo, hurry up! Are you gonna order?
You know you need a quarter for that thing to work!
Oh, guys! I'm trying to order! It's hard to read without my glasses or my wallet. Root beer salad?
Robo, are you chewing gum while you eat?
So? I knew it sounded like extra chewing.
Alright, you guys wasted too much time chewing and dipping. Look, we're gonna have to take this roller...
Rollerblade?
Roller blood. We're gonna have to take it to the forest.
The forest.
The new forest.
No.
We're not going to make it to the void
by
night.
Forest doesn't like the forest.
And if we got caught
forest
on the street.
Forest doesn't like the forest.
Because the thing is, I think we're being followed. I wasn't going to tell you guys, but the thing is.
There's always something.
No, that's cool. I just definitely think there's absolutely no way I can go to the forest. We're not going to the forest. I'm not ready. Are we home yet? Where are we?
We're still on Main Street. Slow down, I'm gonna ask directions. Excuse me, sir?
Elmer Crazen, we're lost. This is embarrassing. Being lost is embarrassing.
Alfie, why are you talking to a tree?
I don't know.
Why is he looking at me?
Horace, calm down. Look, if we camp out, it's like we were never lost, and no one is embarrassed. All right, I'll chop down a tree. We can sleep in its guts. But remember, I don't have my glasses or my wallet, so we'll see how this goes.
Robot, do you even wear glasses?
Well, I have a very small wallet, so it's hard to see. Hey, look, a sleeping bag, everybody.
Shotgun.
Oh, this sleeping bag's kind of big.
Shotgun.
What does that even...
Kievan, good night. Wake me when I am asleep. for I'm not going to sleep.
Oh, I think I just heard a nuclear bomb.
What did it say?
Oh, look, Roba's having fun. Roba loves nature.
No, I don't. Stop it. Stop it.
I saw you in a bush brushing your teeth with a stick. Admit it, you're a crunchy critter.
Stop it. I have a gun. I'm gonna shoot.
Alfe leaves Roba alone. She is just stressed out.
Horace, I'm a man, not a woman.
You know, I don't know where the boys are. They were supposed to rake leaves. And the thing is, my giant rollerblade prop is missing too. And, you know, I don't know what we're going to do for advanced drama therapy class. The list goes on.
Before enlightenment, you must rake the leaves and take out the trash. After enlightenment, these things are no longer necessary, and that they are boring, and that they suck.
Beep, beep. Hey, is this Main Street?
What?
Can you give me directions to Main Street?
This is just random. We're just in a random part of the woods.
Your dog seems like he has a good sense of direction.
Guys, where's the rollerblade? Oh my god, it's been stolen. Let's get out of here. Porno!
Sir, could we have a ride with you?
Shotgun!
What breed of dog is that?
Half chocolate, half mutt.
What dog? I'm a man, damn it.
Hey, I want to tell your dog something. I think he's awesome.
Heathen, wait, our new sleeping bag.
Wait till the Stardogs get an optical hologram about what y'all done. They will bite. They will bite your hand with their special mouths.
Hey, boys. Drama chamber now. Shirts on. Okay, look, I'm not mad that you didn't rake the leaves. What I want to do is I want to offer an emotional tool to engage your responsibilities with a healthy mental process.
What's the punishment?
It's not a punishment. I want you to wear adult diapers because you need to be relaxed enough to go to the bathroom while you work. This will lead to an inner peace.
Number two.
They're one and the same. Exactly the same thing. It's a release. They're one and the same. It's a release. A release is a release.
You know what they say. Before enlightenment, rake the leaves, do the dishes. After enlightenment, rake the leaves, do the dishes.
Guys, why are our dishes all in the yard?
Hello. I am the narrator. Welcome to the new Dark Age.
It's totally emotional for me to watch. It's draining. So many things I could say about that. What am I supposed to say? Well, I'll tell you what my parents said separately. They're divorced. My dad was like, "You're an idiot. Those voices, why did you do the voices?" Like, he just cringed. He thought the voices were horrible and that I shouldn't have done them. And my mom is just like, "Are you on drugs? That, like, like, do you know what a narrative is?" And so the network kind of said the same thing. But the thing is that this show has one thing going for it, which is I basically make it like with two other people, or it can be a very small team, meaning it's super cheap to make. So they were like, "Let's try to remake it for daytime, for kids." And the way we're going to do that is you know, new voices, new script, new characters. Which I think is funny because, as you'll see, none of that changed. So new voices. So now we're like, we've kind of left everything I was talking about art, and we're just getting into like some funny things about TV making. So you just saw that pilot, and so, you know, the first thing was like, all right, let's replace all the voices. And I just think these are like, these make me cringe. What happens is, so I moved out to LA to remake this pilot because we were going to do it more officially. Like the pilot we just watched, I did in my apartment. And the idea for this was to make it, you know, in the network, at the studio, because it's for a bigger audience. Daytime is like prime time. It's, the idea is to remake something that can go up against SpongeBob. So everything is like more official, more whatever. So let's listen to, I'll show you the character, Roba, that robot character, this guy.
But remember, I don't have my glasses or my wallet.
All right, let's listen to some Roba auditions. So this is people, this is voice actors in LA sending in auditions for their Roba.
Art Butler.
Okay, just...
It's way too loud. So what we did is I took a part of the new script and gave them lines to read. So that's what you'll hear.
Don't get any spin. I think I might be mind-controlled. I'm very weak-minded. More things are getting buds. Buds are becoming mainstream. I'm thinking about growing mine bigger or decorating it with stickers that say doing the butt.
So we're going to hear that joke over and over. We'll listen to like four of them. I don't want to make this painful.
Cam Clark.
Okay, just don't get any spit in it. I think I might be mind-controlled. I'm very weak-minded.
Charlie Schlatter.
Okay, just don't get any...
Oh, these are just horrible. The point was like... The point was that, like...
Gideon Emery, Roba. Okay, just don't get any spit in it.
That one's okay. The point was that after this whole expensive casting situation, all the executives and I agreed that I did a better Roba. And we kind of came to that conclusion with all the characters. Except... for Horace. And so I did all three of these voices. So what we did is we swapped out the Horace character, this guy, because he kind of needs to be the straight man, like the way the audience enters into this situation and experiences these two. And I think what that also does is, since Horace was essentially my own voice, if you take him out of the equation, you can't really connect all three other voices together, whereas you can kind of trace Roba's voice back to Horace's voice and Alfie's to Horace. So I think that was good. I'm happy with that, and I think that's going to make my dad happy. That's all I'm trying to do. Let's see if we can find the actual Horace edition that I liked. We might not be able to do that. We're going to give this like 10 more seconds. Because we'll hear it in a second. All right, I can't find it. So, new voices. Another thing we did is this is just like a funny little thing that I think might be interesting. In this pilot we just watched, there were actually two really awesome actors and actresses. This was Amy Sedaris.
Mr. Rake Leaves.
Who's obviously awesome, and this guy at the end was George Takei from Star Trek. So, you know, I wanted to do that. I wanted to, you know, work with awesome actors like that again. We actually had the guy who did Bender's voice from Futurama come in and try to do a version of Alfe, but it didn't work out. It was funny. He came in, and this guy was Bender. If you've seen the show, he was like basically like a drunk robot. And it's funny because you can tell they basically modeled the character after him, and he wasn't really doing a voice after all. But someone we did use is this woman, Pam Alton, I think her name is, and she did the voice of Bobby from King of the Hill. And so she works on this new one that I'm doing. Okay, one other thing. So that was new voices, new script, whatever. Oh my God, 8:40. That's awesome. Okay, I'll go through this really quick. That's not awesome. I wish I could spend all night with you. New characters. This is funny. This will be good. So one of the new characters, basically I started to work with some new partners, and one of our new characters is Tuck's dog. So full circle. I think that's pretty awesome. So here's part of the process of making a TV show the way I do it is drawing these things in pencil first. So here's the Tuck's dog. And one thing I want to do is show you a little bit of the stuff I've been doing over the past couple weeks, which is we're kind of slowing stuff down and doing a better job at everything this time also, because, again, it's for daytime, it's a bigger audience. The thing we just saw, like, that I showed you, I was essentially just setting up these scenes, doing the composition, and then someone else was barely animating it. This time we just have more talented animators and more time, so it's getting some awesome animation. We'll watch it right now. Like, you can just watch 2 seconds of this and tell. It's just the way it moves. I just have these little clips that I want to show you of the new episode. It's just the way it moves and looks is just much more fluid and awesome. But let's find a Tuck's dog so I can give some structure to this lecture. This guy's pretty good.
Brilliant! The only thing I can say about you is that you're great men.
This is funny. We'll watch this. This is going to be part of the new intro.
Ever since the late Stone Age, there have been unique individuals who solve problems. This is the story.
So we also, something we've done to mainstream this show is we took the three characters and we turned them into this little fake company called Problem Solvers. So they kind of have like a detective agency, totally like Scooby-Doo. It's just supposed to be an updated Scooby-Doo. But I think it's funny because the three characters, the way I think about their little detective agency was almost like Paper Rad in a weird way. Let me show you one more funny thing before we get to... This is just some great animation that I'm so excited to be working with this level of awesomeness. Anyway. Oh, there's one more really funny thing like that. Yes. This is so awesome.
I can swear I'm screaming up when I don't want to eat it. Everybody controls that thing.
No,
anyway. I realize this isn't making sense, but I'm just trying to give you tell you a little bit about what I do and give you a sneak peek of this new stuff. But let's find Tux. There he is. You know what? We actually did use Bender's. The guy who did Bender's doing the Tuck's dog voice. Okay.
Sour grapes. It's going to be really fun.
Anyway. All right. Let's bring this home. Why is television bad? Well, the thing is, like, the reason why it's bad and the thing is, what I wanted to talk about in this context, which I think is interesting, and where we are in like an art museum and we can think about these things, is like And it's interesting to think about this work in television versus the work I'm going to show here and the work I showed you that I did at Deitch Projects. A lot of the structure around my opportunities in television is dictated by people who are making decisions and making limitations for me that are all from like a very fear-based decision-making place in themselves, meaning they don't want to lose their job. And that's fine. Like, things, television needs to make money, but I think what they're doing is kind of, they're shooting themselves in the foot because something that's going to work, something that's going to make money, anything is never going to come from fear. And I think that's really important. I think that my experience here and in other places in the art world, it's been like there's other hangups, but people are more at peace with that and they're not always afraid for their life or their job, which is great. 8:45. I wanted to talk about this a lot more, but I don't think it's that super interesting. One fear-based thing, though, just to make my point a bit clearer, is I wanted to show you basically all these clips I've been showing you, and throughout the whole process of making this new show, I have people, executive producers, coming in and they want to change everything. Or they try to give me advice or help, and it's very, it can just be really dumb and bad, and it's very weird to be in charge of a creative process. Like, say what you will about the quality of the first pilot I showed you, but like certainly I was able to birth this, and it's like it's a full show. It's a solid thing. Like, you definitely might not be able to understand it or like it, but there is an internal consistency here that none of these executives could really output. So it's kind of really funny to see when they try to like say stuff. There's a couple lines in here that are just, let me try to pick some out. It's like the characters don't seem like they're engaged in each other in the situation. That's just such a weird thing to hear. It's just such an abstract, it's just such a fear-based thing. Like, I don't, like, was that a concern here? I mean, they're looking at each other, they're talking. I don't really get that. I mean, that to me just seems like, something you wouldn't worry about. And again, I've just kind of structured this lecture so I could show you some of this television stuff, and I'm not really giving a great context or meaning to it. But I like how the executive ends his notes saying that my son liked it. Which is the whole point. It was for 11-year-olds. Like, the new stuff, yeah, anyway. I think we could do a question and answer. I definitely think like there's people here that are smarter than me and we could talk about this stuff. And I think like I've shown you a lot of stuff and I have more stuff, but maybe it makes sense to like slow stuff down and just talk about it. We could do that for like 10 minutes. That's sometimes a good way to engage the audience and bring up issues, because I'm just like kind of lost in all this stuff.
Question, what is Paper Rat doing now?
This is funny, these are the questions I was afraid of. right now, what happened? Like, it was Paper Rat was like three people, like I said, and I lived with Jessica. It was a brother and sister I worked with, and we did everything together, like, we would go on tour and do the art in people's basements and the music, and everything was kind of connected. And the artwork kind of came out of a way of life, and that way of life just obviously couldn't sustain itself because it was just crazy, you know. It was no money or jobs and personal happiness, and it just, like, sadly, and probably for the better, just completely collapsed. And once that way of life collapsed, it was impossible. I mean, look at this. I mean, this website, I was looking at it the other day, like, There's just so much work here. There's so much time. And you can't be doing this stuff if you're not living it every day. And so once I stopped living it every day, it kind of ceased to exist in how it did. Like, this is a comic that Jessica and I drew together at a spiritual retreat in South Carolina at a Meher Baba Center. And like, that stuff's not going on anymore. So, but now, like, there's still some stuff we're trying to do. Like, the band Pavement emailed us and asked us to do a T-shirt, so we kind of like flaked out on that. Like, there's still little things like that I hope to bring us back, project-based things. But it's just never going to be like this, and that's a good thing because this was like a complete learning experience, I think. Okay, next question.
How did you start working with Deloitte Records?
That was about the same time as college, when I was talking about meeting all these drawing people. Like, there was an element of music that was concerned with it. Just a general community was based around the art school I went to and the art school in Providence called RISD, and there were just kids my age, and we were all doing the same thing. And some of these kids were even doing it in crazier ways that were like living it. Much like I just said, Paper Rad was a way of life. In Providence, it was a way of life to kind of live in these industrial spaces and work, create music, art. There was no border between anything. And there was this couple people there called Load Records who took that work and put it onto CDs and DVDs. Two really amazing people, Ben and Laura. And I just knew them in a very organic, social way, and from that, we released things with their company, and I actually, my apartment now is at their house, Ben and Laura's house.
I think that answers the question.
Yes?
Can you talk about video art and, like, video artists like that? Makes me think of Nam June Paik.
Sure.
Versus animation and some interdisciplinary boundaries and how those are breaking down.
Definitely. I think that's totally a great way to bring this back into the art context. First off, I think, like, what's totally different between Nam June Paik and me and my friends or this work is that I was saying the other day, like, I had a Macintosh, like, at a very, very young age, and I was making animations. And the things I do, my artwork, the way I draw, the way I work as an artist is native to the computer. I'm not taking ideas and kind of translating those through video. Like, I, as casually as I draw in a sketchbook, I'm making videos. And I think that's something that was not happening in the 60s, or what early video art is, you're either reacting to, like, how now everybody can make videos, so you're making, like, weird videos about the body or surveillance or feedback loops, you know, video itself. I think the video, what I end up doing with my art and through video is it's just basically, like, something as natural to me as painting or drawing, and it's kind of, but then it's kind of weird to then look at that video art and put it back into the history of video art. And I'm not good at that. Like, I'm sure there have been ways of thinking about that that are interesting. But I think it's very new. Like, people, the video art that I do and that me and my friends do, it's not by any means, like, in the mainstream of the art world video art. I think art world video art still is confused, and that's fine. So I don't think there's, like, a clear way for me to talk about it even. Is that, like, what would be something you would... I mean, that's, like, interesting, right? Like...
Well, like, the MIA video?
Yeah.
Yeah, video and art.
Yeah. Right. That's a good point. It's totally different. Like, you can trace it back to... I just want to say, yeah, maybe we could end on that, is, like, I think it's, I think they're totally not related in a way that's interesting. Like, of course it's related. I'm sitting down at a computer, but I think they're doing two very different things, and I'm intending them to do two very different things, and it's, like, I'm sure Frank Stella had an occasion to paint his room, you know, or something like white with stripes, maybe even, or put up wallpaper. And that, but I feel like that's as unrelated to his work as me having to make an MIA video to pay the rent that month, or because, you know, I wanted to be friends with her or something. Like, I think it's almost like, obviously we should talk about how, like, I'm bringing this like television into your guys' museum, and it's like, what's going on here? Like, is this Shepherd Fairey? Like, this is territory that kind of sucks, and I hate that stuff. But at the same time, I just want to say, like, I think about art and television very differently. I wish I had more time to explore that, but I just wanted to show you some of my television stuff, and then you guys, as the audience, will have to figure out why my art and my television is different or the same exact thing. One more question.
What can we expect from you this weekend?
So this weekend I'm doing, like, there's a third, I also do music and stuff, so I'm going to kind of do this performance I do where I have, it's almost like a weird, like, rock opera where I've created a video and then I play live music along to it. So that'll be this Saturday night at midnight at Modern or whatever it is. Okay, well, thanks a lot, everybody. It's been a while.